This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
It is a Tar Heel takeover. Today on the program should be a great deal of fun with guests. And Wes, we'll get to all that stuff. But first of all, hope you had a good weekend.
Thanks, you too, Pack. Big birthday weekend at the Packer house, right?
Yep. Chester, big boy, the legend, turned 12. And there he is, front and center. And this was on Saturday. And as I mentioned, today UNC's Roy Williams shares a birthday with this legend, our man Chester, turning 12. And he did enjoy steak and Frosty Paws. And that was definitely on the menu. So big boy turned 12 over the weekend. And he's still kicking, rocking and rolling. Been awesome for a dozen years. Hard to believe. That's our boy, Chester, getting it done.
Did Roy Williams ever find out that he shares a birthday with Chester?
I don't know, but it is a Tar Heel takeover, but we do wish Roy a happy birthday, and it was a big one for him, by the way, on Saturday. I'm not going to say anything, but if you do, Chester, you know, the old adage about, I know it's not technically true, but 12 times 7, well, that'd be 84, that would be the age in people years for Chester, but Roy's under that, which is good. So Roy's still rocking and rolling, doing his thing, having a big recruiting class, looking for a bounce back year. And again, today's a Tar Heel takeover, and we'll eventually get to Mack Brown coming up at the bottom of the hour and making his debut today on the show, Tyler Hansbrough, coming up in hour number two. So we look forward to both those gentlemen joining us.
And lots of conversation about Carolina, but first let's get to the news of the weekend as it concerns college athletics. Not as much from an ACC perspective, Pack, but tell you what, on Friday afternoon and Saturday, a lot of things started trickling out now about student athletes, particularly in the Pac-12. Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, has got a little bit of a deal on his hands now because there is a cavalcade of student athletes across all brands of universities and really kind of all sports, Mark, that are starting to say they've got some concerns and some objectives they want met before they want to participate not only in the 2020 football season, but some in the 2020-2021 athletic season.
Wes, you're right. Over 400 student athletes, quite frankly, are involved in the scenario out West. And again, there's a lot to talk about here. And it's We Are United, and they have a whole list of longer than your arm of not necessarily demands, but items that they would like to address. And I will just say this. You know, we've just gone through this last couple months in this country and have really, even heavy on our show, talked about the power of the student athlete, the ability to have a platform to be told whatever the story may be, whether it be racial or social injustice and making a change. And before people have a knee-jerk reaction to what the student athletes are doing out West, I would just say this. If we've learned anything in the last 2 months, it is to listen. All right. Before you have an immediate, oh, what are you guys crazy? Or, hey, man, they should get everything. Regardless of where you are on the spectrum, way far left, far right, I would just suggest that you listen and pay attention to whatever the conversation is. It really should be, a practice we should all do, regardless of whatever we're talking about. Now, I will tell you, I did read this extensively yesterday, and I do think there's some things on the list that absolutely should come into play. I also think there's some things on the list that they have absolutely no business wanting to go in that direction. So we can get into this if you want, because we could spend hours upon hours. In fact, I probably will do that this afternoon on the radio show. But I do think this has a trickle-down effect to every conference. And this is not just a Pac-12 thing. It is right now for the We Are United position. But I sense, again, you've already seen Trevor Lawrence on social media go, hey, this was really well said. You've also seen some SEC players in a dialogue last week, which was certainly open-minded to have true conversation and dialogue in which there are concerns. And let's be honest. I mean, you know, if you have a child, forget student-athletes. If you have a child that's going to college right now, there is a concern about the safety and health of your child going to a college campus. And all that's about ready to happen here in the next week to 2 weeks, depending on what school you are around the country. So I totally get the concern, given the fact that we're going through a pandemic. We have no idea today on August the 3rd if we're going to even play college football, even though the smartest people in the room, as we've talked about, have kind of figured out a way to navigate. And, hey, here's our schedule. Here's what we're trying to do. And even today, Wes, we have no idea if we're going to play. But I will say, going back to your original conversation with the demands made by the student athletes, I would just say be open-minded in the conversation. And where this thing goes, I have no earthly idea. But I do think there's some ideas in that list that make a ton of sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, one, a lot of players, in particular the student athletes at the collegiate level, are starting to take cues from pro sports, right? I mean, let's be honest. They're watching, whether it be the NBA, the WNBA, Major League Baseball, MLS in some cases, and now NFL players report to camp and some opt out. And I think on the collegiate level, it's starting to become presence of mind about safety in the pandemic. And, you know, think about it. You got guys at the major college level who probably have some connection to either former teammates or people they know that are playing at the next level. And they're hearing about all the things that go on, whether it be the bubble for the NBA and the WNBA and MLS, or how the NFL is doing some screenings. They're creating a list of COVID players that are going to be away from the team part of camp as they either around somebody who tested positive or they have tested positive themselves. So the medical side of what these players in the Pac-12 and student athletes in the Pac-12 are talking about, Mark, I'm kind of okay with, I think, as you are. I understand the safety aspect of this. And as we've said from the start, the dollars and cents involved in testing is significant. It's significant at the Power 5 level. It's going to be an investment of sorts to the extent that some of these other schools in FBS football can do. But there are varying degrees of it because it is a costly process, as people find out. Whether you go for a free drive-through test in your community to see if you had COVID-19 or been exposed to it, or you go to a private care practice where you then shell out the dollars, you understand kind of the give and take now that these institutions have. So let's take the safety aspect of this in the Pac-12, and I'll put that into, I agree with that. I think you got to have some clarity about protocol and process, right? But then they skew to another side of the house on this, and that is fair compensation at the reduction of administrators, almost calling for Larry Scott's salary to be reduced. Now, Pac, that sounds to me a little more like, wait a second here. You want us to take money from some of these people and then turn and give it to you? Well, I'm going to go back to some of the things we've talked about with name, image, and likeness. Tax implications, all these other things, Mark, all that stuff's going to come into play when you go down that road. And it seems in some respects that the 400-odd student-athletes in the Pac-12, I'm not saying they're misguided, but misintention might be maybe a better word to use because I'm not sure you want to go down that road as a college athlete. I'm not sure that what opt-out in the NFL means is the same thing at the collegiate level. I mean, the cost of a scholarship, that which will be honored, by the way, by most of these conferences, there's so many different little intangibles involved here. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting fall on and off the field at this rate, and we're early into August.
100% agree. I take it even a step further. I think all the health and safety standards that are requested by the student-athletes makes a ton of sense to me. I mean, we're going through a pandemic. You want to make sure that, hey, if I'm going to go out there and basically put my body on the line, I want to be sure that I'm good to go for future years down the road. Makes a ton of sense to me. Name, image, and likeness, I am pro NIL for all the student athletes. I do think, though, as I said from day one, I think it still should be tied into graduation rates. And again, I don't think it's going to apply to all 500,000 student athletes, but hey, the free market system, we'll find out who's got any kind of value. All the racial and social issues in which they want to be looked upon, I think it's fantastic. We've seen that over the last two or three months, and we've even bragged about how cool it is to see young people engaged in making a change. All of that in this We Are United list, all of those items, check, 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 I think are fantastic. there are some things that I thought were just dead wrong. You mentioned the whole take a page from the NFL. Hey, there's a difference between being an employee getting paid seven figures and you being a student athlete receiving a scholarship. Night and day. Mm-hmm. They do not apply, in my opinion, as being the same. And there's also a list in here that the NCAA exploits college athletes academically. I could not disagree with that more. In fact, I would say as far as a vast majority of current student athletes, if we're not for the NCAA in giving scholarships, you probably could never afford to obtain the education, whether you play in the NFL, the NBA, the WNBA, Major League Baseball, I don't care what it is, PGA Tour, whatever. The vast majority of student athletes would never be able to obtain that kind of education. So I don't want to hear about the NCAA exploited you academically. If you didn't do the work, that would be on you. That's on you. That's not on the NCAA. That's not on the institution. But a scholarship has given you the opportunity to acquire an incredible education free of charge. So you can't say the NCAA exploited you academically. You mentioned the revenue sharing, Wes. You know, again, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, if all of a sudden you want to be treated like an employee, you'll find out that in life there are certain things that, you know, you just take for granted when you're a student athlete. You know, that education, that training table, the medical, the expertise that you're around, the amount to travel. Hey, you know what? All of a sudden, if you want to be an employee and say, hey, I deserve a cut, well, that also means taxes. That also means, you know what, that could get turned around on you so quickly that you go, holy mackerel, it's costing me an arm and a leg just to play here. Be careful. I mean, you got, you know, I understand, hey, you got a platform, a chance to say something, but you really need to do your due diligence when it comes to all that stuff. So, again, I will just say, as I said 10 minutes ago, it's an opportunity for all of us to be open-minded in the discussion. I do think there's some very valid points in the list, but I do think there's some items where, like you said, they got out of their jurisdiction a little bit, and I don't think you just want to go there, because you may find out that was the worst thing you could wish for.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
And here's Sam Howell taking a shot to the end zone for the touchdown. Going downtown, he's got a receiver wide open. Touchdown, North Carolina.
The true freshman quarterback just dealing.
He's got ice in his veins. He's very confident.
Throwing long, throwing deep, and Edwin caught for a touchdown.
The legend of Sam Howell continues.
His touchdowns this season are an FBS record among true freshmen.
What a season he has put up.
Sam Howell, big-time freshman. Now, Wes, a sophomore. Everybody in the league's had a little more tape to watch. And Sam, of course, was on the show with us not too long ago. But a spectacular start to his college career. And it's going to be fun to watch. Again, we're going to have this conversation on the assumption that we are going to play 10+1 in the ACC. And we've discussed the quarterback carousel in this league, how deep it is. At the very top, you got the 1-2 combination with Trevor Lawrence at Clemson and Sam Howell at North Carolina. But Howell was nothing short of awesome in year one.
Well, if you take his freshman year and kind of look at it progressing, I don't know how you go about, you know, forecasting 2020 other than, holy smokes, he's got an opportunity, Pack, to just kind of, I mean, he's got a chance to set Carolina's career touchdown passing record. Now, I know we're one game short of a regular season of normal, but if they play 11 games, he only needs 31 touchdowns set the Carolina career passing record for scores, surpassing Darian Durant. Now, first of all, the fact that Darian Durant's the answer to that question is probably a good bar bet, right? But the idea that Sam Howell needs 31 to set it, and he had 38 last year, he needs 29 to break Trevor Lawrence's record for most through a sophomore season. I mean, you start to really kind of forecast ahead here, and it gets pretty scary quick, in my opinion.
Well, here's the other thing that's really scary is that all those dudes that just caught those passes are back. And this is a team that should score if they stay relatively healthy. North Carolina should score a ton of points. Now, again, I think the number I used when Sam was with us was 18 gazillion yards passing, give or take. And he said, you know, that's exactly what we drew up on the board. So He's got a great sense of humor, but, man, he is a player. And just kind of seamlessly went from high school in that first game against South Carolina last year, which was played right down the road here in Charlotte, and lit him up. And you know what? Never looked back. And, you know, for Mac Brown, who's going to join us here in about 10 minutes or so, talking about, you know, he just plays with so much confidence and swagger, and nothing seems to rattle him. And that's always what you hear with the great ones. And he seems to have all of those characteristics. But I'll say it again. Not only is he a talented dude, but they have a lot of talent around them on the offensive side. This team should score a bunch of points, and I expect Sam to have another great year. And granted, as I said, people are going to have a chance to watch tape and all that stuff, and you know, there's bound to be some things that people will pick up, and that's just the way. That's good coaching and everything else. But this is a really, really talented dude, and again, he's a Sunday player. It seems that way, even though we've only seen him play one full year. But man, he was great last year.
All right, can we go to this graphic, though? I mean, you and I have been following ACC football a long time, and I know a lot of our fans have followed it for generations and decades and so forth. But when you see this graphic here of most touchdown passes in ACC history through two seasons, I mean, we talk about Deshaun Watson a lot on this. We talk about Jameis Winston on this list. I mean, Russell Wilson. This is through your sophomore year. Now, Trevor Lawrence has 66. Jameis Winston, 65. Deshaun Watson, 49. Now, Pac, I remember 49 was a good number. Remember that? I mean, Russell Wilson, 48. Man, really slinging it. What does this say about how good the quarterbacks have been and how good they might be going forward in this league?
It's also a testament to how the game is being played, Wes. Even within the last 5 years, we talk about how this game changes. And it's almost impossible to compare eras and so forth. But the bottom line is you still got to sling it. You still got to catch it. It's still got to be a touchdown, regardless of the style of play. Mm-hmm. But North Carolina is built to throw it. And when you've got wide receivers like this and a quarterback who can deliver, I mean, those numbers are going to go through the roof. Now, keep in mind, just using a guy like Trevor Lawrence, I mean, how many times have we seen Trevor Lawrence sitting on the bench in the third quarter? I mean, those numbers could have really been astronomical,
right?
If the intent was to see if you can light somebody up for 70 points every weekend, and Clemson probably could have done that in the last 2 years under Trevor Lawrence, but it takes nothing away from anybody on that list. All those guys on that list that we just showed you are players, and that includes the guy under center at North Carolina.
Yep, and you see Dyami Brown and Daz Newsome. By the way, the hidden gem in this group, and the guy, in my opinion, doesn't get enough love, is Bo Corrales, by the way, Pac. I mean, I think Brown and Newsome are sensational, but Bo Corrales, I mean, he makes big-time catches, red zone catches, the whole bit, and I think those three right there, they set a pretty high bar in this league. I mean, you start talking about the best wide receiver group, and certainly we know what the situation is with Justin Ross, and we wish him a return to health for 2021, but the idea that you got those three guys to throw the rock to, that is a scary, scary thought for opponents who play Carolina this year.
I do this every time we talk about North Carolina or we talk about Louisville. I bring up the other guy. I think Louisville's cast of quarterback and wide receivers, North Carolina's cast of quarterback and wide receivers, Clemson, needless to say, even without Justin Ross part of it. I mean, you're talking about those three in particular, and I don't mean to leave anybody out, but those three in particular are as good as anybody that wants to line up and play college football in 2020. They would, and you know what? If you ask all three of those coaches, they wouldn't trade their guys for anybody else. But those three are 1A, 1B, 1C. I mean, that's how good all three of those teams are.
Well, I think it's scary. But here's the other thing, too. Based on last year's comparison, I mean, is it fair to put, and even with 11 games and understanding it's 10 in the league plus the non-conference opponent, I mean, is 30-35, is that realistic for Sam Howell? I would say based on what we saw a year ago, 30-35 is realistic, Mark.
I don't know why it wouldn't be. It's not like you're reaching to say, man, could a guy ever throw 35 touchdown passes? Well, yeah, he could, threw 38 last year. Like I said, I mean, there are a bunch of smart coaches in this league that are going to watch film like nobody's business and go, okay, what are his weaknesses? You get a chance to sample Sam Howell this time versus where it was a year ago. Coaches will figure out a way to let him play to his to a weakness, but I don't think he has many weaknesses when you put him up, surround him with so much offensive talent. That's why I keep going back to those wide receivers that, you know, Sam Howell will figure this thing out. I don't think it's crazy to think he's going to be in the 30s or higher from a touchdown pass. I think the bigger question will be if North Carolina's got such big leads, for argument's sake, Mack Brown hopes so, that he can go say, hey, Sam, go take a seat, man. You know, go grab some Gatorade, whatever the case may be. You don't need to. We don't need to see any more in the fourth quarter. Like I said, how many times did we see Trevor Lawrence last year, you know, flowing his hair back in the fourth quarter, knowing, hey, I'm done for the day after three quarters. So in a perfect world, Mack Brown hopes that they're in that kind of position where he can play as many guys as possible. But I think the sky's the limit here for Sam. I think he's a terrific kid and a tremendous player with great talent around him, and that's a good combination.
Well, and probably the first thing Mack Brown would do if he were tapping into our conversation before our visit here at the bottom of the hour is, oh, by the way, don't forget, we've got two fairly good running backs and four starters returning in the offensive line, too. So, you know, we'll see how the run-pass balance works. Carolina would love, I know Phil Longo talked about it a year ago, developing the two-way go offensively. And if Carolina is able to get a run game that you have to pay attention to and drop a guy down, then all of a sudden that might mean one-on-one with those three monsters. Holy smokes. I mean, then all of a sudden they got you playing backwards. And that could prove to be a big year for the Tar Heels. It'll be fun. Carolina, you know, we'll get to this later in the hour after our visit with Coach Brown. In fact, we'll ask him about the impact he thinks Notre Dame may have on the ACC. Because, Mark, you and I were having this discussion 2 weeks ago when, you know, we didn't think Notre Dame would be a part of ACC football, right? And it was immediately an answer of Carolina, Virginia Tech, Louisville, maybe Florida State. Who knew? You know, somebody else might sneak in there too. But now all of a sudden, people probably pencil Notre Dame in as the second best team in the league. It's going to be fun to see how that changes kind of the order behind the favorite Tigers.
Well, I'm just going to say this, and I say this every year. You know, we read like crazy, and you talk to coaches and players, and, you know, we kind of feel that we have a handle on it as we go to July into August before camps open. I got news for you. We don't have a handle on it. Now, we may be right at the end of the year, but you know what? A lot of times we're not. And on paper, Clemson definitely looks like the team to beat. I mean, we said that a year ago, and it turned out to be true. On paper, Notre Dame probably is the second best team in the league. And then again, I think there's going to be a conglomerate of North Carolinas and Virginia Techs and Miamis and Pittsburghs and Florida States, maybe Virginia that could be really, you know, top 25-ish, good. But, Wes, you still got to play games, man. You still, in this world, the pandemic,
right?
Let's find out who's in shape. Let's find out who's been motivated. Let's find out who's been doing the work in March, April, and May when everything was shut down and closed. Let's find out which way the ball bounces. Let's find out who gets lucky. Let's find out who stays healthy. Let's find out what the schedule is. How about that as a unique concept? We still don't know what the schedule is. We had a commissioner on Friday, and he said, hey, we really can't worry about all this until everybody kind of makes their announcement and then TV gets involved. I mean, there's so many what-ifs here that we could assume that Clemson's going to be really good and North Carolina and Notre Dame, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm not going to pencil anybody in. If you're putting a gun to my head and you say, Pack, you got to pick somebody, I'm going to pick Clemson until proven otherwise. They've dominated the league over the last 5 years. You'd be crazy to pick against them. But they still have to go out and prove it. And you take Justin Ross off. I mean, at what point in time do their young wide receivers step up where you go, yikes, how are we going to defend these guys? You know, they lost four offensive linemen up front. I mean, everybody's got question marks, whether we're talking about Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, or whatever your favorite doormat is in whatever league you follow. So, you know, there's no guarantees, period, especially in the year 2020, in which every single person on the planet has been turned upside down. So, you know, the year's been goofy. It's been weird. Hey, what's to say a college football season, assuming we get this thing started next month, isn't goofy and weird too? So I would just, you know, just tell everybody to pump the brakes a little bit and say, hey, let's go play, man. And I know we can make bold, crazy predictions and throw something up against the wall. I mean, there were morons on TV last month going, there's a 25% chance we're going to play. What does that mean? It means nothing. So if I sat here and told you, hey, the best team in the country is Clemson and Alabama wouldn't make the playoffs and, you know, Southern California is going to have a rebirth to be in the playoffs, none of that matters. It really doesn't. So let's just hope that we have a season that starts next month and we can keep everybody healthy, and we can get through at least 10 plus 1.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
It is a Tar Heel takeover. An hour from now, Tyler Hansbrough will be making his debut on the program. We look forward to that. But right now, we bring on a guy that's been almost kind of a regular with us. He goes from ESPN, and now he's in Chapel Hill for round two and doing a great job. Got everybody all fired up. Mac Brown's on board with us. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark and Wes. How are you guys?
We can't complain, and if you did, it really wouldn't matter. I mean, the world that we're living in right now is upside down. But, you know, I want to go back to the last time we had you on the show. Wes and I were doing one of those quarantine primetime specials, and I remember you saying, I think the question to you was something about, man, you know, you can't mess around. You open up at UCF, you got Auburn and Atlanta, and you're like, man, I tell you what, if we could get rid of these non-conference games, I'd sleep a lot better. Well, lo and behold, you must have the magic genie in Chapel Hill because you don't have to deal with either one of those guys.
Well, Sally, my wife Sally used to say, if you didn't have to coach the games, you'd have the best job ever. Now she's saying, I'm going to quit saying that. This is closer to being that way than we ever want to admit. Yeah, it's crazy. And here we are starting our practice on Thursday, our preseason camp. We don't know when we're playing any of our games. We don't know who the plus one's going to be. So it's really different in coaching. Our coaches said the other day, how do we know who to prepare for the plus one? I said, you don't. So just forget it. I mean, that's what it is. When we get the plus one, we'll start looking at them. And hopefully it's one of the ones we prepared for. But it's so tough right now for administrators to try to schedule because some teams aren't playing, some teams have moved back to spring, and it's just crazy. And then all of a sudden we pick up Notre Dame, we pick up Florida State, we pick up Syracuse, and we added Wake Forest, but at least we played Wake Forest last year. So we've got some idea of their personnel and what they're going to do, but we've got to go back and jump all over preparation for Notre Dame and Syracuse and Florida State, which we hadn't prepared for at all, and Boston College, which we already knew because we had that on the schedule. But Florida State and Boston College have new coaches, and even the Boston College coach wasn't a head coach last year. So preparation's a little bit unique this year, like everything else.
Coach, that's the part I actually wanted to ask you about, and I'm glad you started down this road because – I think people get this idea that June becomes kind of a vacation month. And while it does, before you go on that vacation, there is some degree of expectation that you're going to have some resources and references built, both digitally and video-wise and things like that, to have as your schedule plays out in 2020. Now, all of a sudden, here in late July, you get three new opponents, and all of a sudden, I mean, how in the world do you start dividing up the information? Because you don't know yet, to your point a moment ago, you might draw one of those three opponents in week one.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. We'll have a staff meeting today at noon because we're working out this morning. And that was one of the things I was going to tell them is you may open up with Notre Dame. You may open up with Syracuse. So be ready for it. I mean, you have no choice. And so much of our energy was put into Central Florida and Auburn, and now we're not playing either. So so it's a little bit crazy.
Now, you bring up that Notre Dame is now on the schedule. That's also going to be the case for a number of teams in the league, even though we knew there were going to be six games between Notre Dame and the conference before all this craziness happened. What's your take on the fact that these guys have been playing football since 1887, and for the first time ever, they're going to jump in a league championship race in 2020? It's kind of a unique situation.
It's very unique, Mark, but I think it's great for them this year, and it's great for us because they needed some extra help in scheduling. And anytime you add Notre Dame to your league, it's a great brand. They do it right. They go by the rules. They're a great team. Brian Kelly is a really good friend of mine. He does a tremendous job. So this is a win-win. I feel like that they will also bring some TV money, it sounds like, into the league. All of us are needing that right now. So I think it'll be exciting. Our guys are excited about playing Notre Dame.
All right, Coach, let's go to quarterback here. And you've got a great one. There's no doubt about it. And now all of a sudden, with Notre Dame being added into the conference fold this year, here come some others. And I know you watch enough ball in the offseason to know that your schedule is littered now with great quarterbacks that you're going to see, and you got one of your own. In your mind, how good is the quarterback position in 2020 in the ACC?
Oh, Wes, I think it's great. And with your quarterback becomes tremendous offenses. And that's what we're doing. I think we all felt like that all the teams in this league are getting better now. And the Coastal's kind of taking a hit. I think we've had seven different champions in seven different years. A lot of the teams now can win it again and step up. Mike Norvell's going to do a tremendous job down at Florida State. So they're going to be back soon. Manny Diaz is recruiting like wildfire down at Miami. And Dino Babers has already got Syracuse headed in the right direction. So you're just looking at this league as a whole, and I feel like it's really good.
You know what, Mac? It's funny. We had so much fun last year talking about Coastal Chaos, which has been going on for years and years. You just pointed out seven different teams have won it the last seven different years. What could you do for an encore in a Coastal? Here's an idea. How about no Coastal? So, I mean, we just eliminated the whole conversation, and now it's the first two that can get the Charlotte on your market, set, go. But you mentioned Sam Howell. You know, you've been doing this a long, long time. When you see a talent like this have a year like he did last year, what were some of the things you went to Sam and said, listen, hey, I know you had 38 touchdowns, all that stuff, but that's rearview mirror, man. We got to get better for 2020. Here's what I think you should work on. What were some of the things that you mentioned to your quarterback during the offseason?
There were just a few things, Mark, because he had such a tremendous year, and we're so proud of him. He's tough, he's smart, he's driven. He has absolutely no hobbies. His hobby is football. I asked him on Valentine's Day, I said, you got a girlfriend? You taking her to dinner tonight or anything? And he says, yeah, Madden. He said, I'm going home playing Madden, Coach. Madden's nice. Madden doesn't cost much money. I can usually win. I'm really good at it. So we have a great relationship. But he's got strong faith. His grade points over a 3.0 is his first year. He's developing a lot of leadership. So we talked to him, Mark, about just being more vocal as a leader. And you can do that in your second year after the success you've had. We talked to him about making more plays with his feet simply because we didn't allow him to last year because he had a sore ankle, and he had a sore knee and a sore shoulder, and we didn't have any experience backing him up after Jace Reuter got hurt and Cade Fortin transferred. And then we've said, let's don't always go for the deep one. Let's make sure that we find the right guy and drop it off more because you got great backs underneath if they drop deep in coverage. So all of those things are things that we felt like that as good as he was last year, he can do better.
Coach, we've gotten into discussion about your team and a couple of others in this league that if they can be just that much better in one area, they got a chance to maybe take it to another level. In your case, it's a conversation that sometimes centrals on defense. And I know how good a coach Jay Bateman is. I think the world of him as a person. Do you sense that your defense is going to take that next step as you get these workouts underway?
Wes, I do. We have more speed. Our secondary is a lot better. We played against Duke with two corners, and one of them gets a concussion on the third play of the game, and we end up having to move a nickel back to corner who'd never played. Poor Jay Bateman's over there, and the guy said, Coach, I really don't know what to do. And he said, we'll just keep you on our sideline. Just look at me, and I'll tell you what to do. That's how bad it got with our lack of depth. And then I made a really bad mistake at halftime. I said, Jay, what happens if one of these two get hurt? He said, let's don't go there. Let's just hope they don't. So that's how bad our depth was. So we're going to have the linebackers are back. We'll be better in the secondary than we were last year, and we're two or three deep there now. Our ends are back, Tamon Fox and Tyrone Hopper, who should be really good. We've got some good guys across the front, even though we lost Strobridge, who was very talented, and we lost Aaron Crawford. So we feel like that one of the keys to us getting better on defense, Wes, is we're going to have more numbers, and we got to play more people. we don't want to have a first team and a second team. I told them I'd like to have 22 guys, 25, 28 guys that can play. And then we don't talk about who the starter is. We keep a fresh guy in the game. And until we can get that depth, which hurt everybody across the country without having much or any spring practice, we're going to be tired and we're going to lose games late. So we've got to do a better job of staying fresh in that fourth quarter.
Coach, it's been interesting on the afternoon radio show to talk to coaches around the country. I had a conversation with Greg Schiano not long ago. He said, Pack, I've yet to see a single player throw a pass, catch a pass, block somebody, tackle anybody. I'm thinking, how is that possible? We can be this close to a season and you still have no idea. And again, Schiano, much like yourself, comes back to a school that he certainly loves. The other day, I'm talking to Brady Hoke. He said, Pack, the hardest thing right now is we're practicing without a football because of rules and so forth, and we got to get adjusted. So with all that adaptation, flexibility, we've heard that almost ad nauseum here for the last couple months. I mean, you've been in the business a long time. What's it been like from a coaching perspective, just teaching, whether it be a player, assistant coach, whatever, mask on, 6 feet, social distancing? I mean, it's a whole new universe for everybody.
Mark, it is so different. And what we've told our coaches, the ones that can manage this chaos are the ones that will have the best teams. So let's don't gripe about it because everybody's got it. It is what it is. We told the players the same time, same thing. If you're not going to wear a mask and do what you're supposed to do with social distancing, that's one of your rules this year. It's one of your guidelines. That's part of your discipline. So you can't play unless you're going to do those things. And we've told our coaches basically the same thing. What we have been able to do is learn to communicate better through Zoom, through FaceTime, things like this. So we've had a lot of meetings. So we've had more meeting time than we would have had if all the coaches were out in high schools in the spring recruiting. So we should know what to do without question. We've even been able to have meeting time with a lot of those young guys coming in this summer that we wouldn't have had. The NCAA let us go to 20 hours a week or so ago. And we weren't able to do that in the past. So we've been able to meet with them more, but we've been able to have walkthroughs with them. And that's so valuable for these young people. So we're actually preparing more like an NFL preseason camp. And then the other day, the NCAA let us put helmets on in the walkthroughs because we've got shields on the top that a lot of the kids have worn in the past. Now they've got a shield on the bottom to try to help keep the virus from spreading. And they're trying to get acclimatized to those helmets and see, does it sweat too much? Does it fog up on the inside of your shield? Does it drip from the sweat? Are you going to be able to handle it? So I do think the NCAA has given us some real advantages of trying to get us all better prepared for practice when we start. The other thing, since some of the kids were quarantined and some of the kids obviously didn't have places to work out, when they were home throughout the spring, we've all got to be more careful in the reentry program. So when we start hitting next week, we've got to make sure that the guys don't have pulls and don't tear soft muscle tissue because they haven't worked out as much. And I feel like our nutritionist as well as our strength staff have done a very good job of getting us in that position.
Well, I tell you what, there's a lot to account for as you start the practice schedule. How's that 6 foot stick you got? You still carrying that around a little bit?
Well, it is. I was talking to Dabo one day, and Dabo said, we've got a 6 foot stick that we're taking with me. So now I carry it around like a staff at practice. And, you can't hit anybody with it, obviously. So you just walk over. Every trainer and manager has one. And they will simply walk over and stick it out between two players who are too close and said, excuse me, please separate and move. So it's just, we're definitely at a different time than we've ever been.
Coach, I'd call that thing the media stick because you might be able to use that for decades upon decades going down the road from the media. Just say, you know, I've had enough of you. That's 6 feet. Get away from me. That worked.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, I like that. Spoke them well from a radio guy.
That's it. Exactly right. Stay healthy.
Hey, Coach, thanks as always.
Thanks, Wes. For you two sitting right over my shoulder here, I'm going to get it right quick.
Uh-oh.
I see it. Yep, look at this. Look at this. I saw it. Look at this.
Oh, nice.
It's your dad.
Oh,
with
man.
Charlie Justice and me and Jason Stanisak. when Jason broke Charlie's all-time rushing record or total yards record, and I keep that dear to my heart. We miss your dad, bud.
Well, thank you so much. His birthday is Saturday. He would have been 79 on Saturday, Coach, so that means a ton, and I know you had that picture, and I saw it when we first came on the screen. I thought, I remember that day right there. That was he loved Jason Stanisek, as you know. So,
and I wish I was smart enough that I would have walked in here and put it up before the interview started, but actually saw it when we sat down. So I didn't have it scripted. I should have.
Take care, Coach. Thanks as always.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Tar Heel Takeover. Many thanks to Mac Brown, who just joined us. Tyler Hansbrough makes his debut coming up here in about 40 minutes, give or take.
I think those of you that remember Tyler Hansbrough playing professional basketball in China, I don't think he's in China playing professional basketball. So there won't be the 20-hour time difference or whatever it is between here in the Far East. But we look forward to having Tyler at the bottom of the hour. John Swofford in a replay from Friday, also coming up, Pack, here at 9 o'clock. And if you missed any of our interview with the commissioner, I thought it was pretty interesting talking about the structure and the process and all the things that happened in that wild 72-hour span last week from really kind of like Tuesday afternoon to Thursday night, right?
Yeah, in fact, it was only crazy for the ACC. I thought it was crazy for college athletics last week. I mean, that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday really gave you a little bit of everything, from the ACC's announcement of the 10+1 to the SEC being, we'll pass on the 1, but we will give you the 10. The Big Ten commissioner, Kevin Warren, basically saying, hey, in the next 5 days, we'll try to figure out if we can open up camp. The Pac-12 with obviously this We Are United thing that's going on. The Big 12 presidents meet today. I mean, so really just spin the wheel, pick your favorite Power 5 league, and there is a major storyline going on one way or the other. But we kind of expected that. We knew last week was going to be an important week. And really, Wes, this is going to be an important week this week, too. I mean, we may finally get some schedules this week in terms of who's playing when and where and at what time. Again, I think the Big 12 is kind of fighting to determine whether they're going to have a full 12-game schedule or they're just going to play a 9+1. I mean, there's so many scenarios there with them. And, you know, hopefully we'll get some news with those guys today. And, you know, but for the ACC, the big announcement was the 10+1 and the fact that Notre Dame, for the first time ever, is jumping in the league and has an opportunity, if they're good enough, to get to an ACC championship game and win it, and what impact it was going to have on the rest of the league from a schedule perspective.
Well, and when you look at Carolina's, Notre Dame is clearly an add to the Tar Heel ledger. And remember last week we talked about adds, drops, and keeps? Well, yes, Carolina did lose Auburn and Central Florida and, you know, potentially an FCS power in James Madison, right, who they were scheduled to play. But now start looking at who Carolina added. And Mack Brown brought it up. Notre Dame, Florida State among the adds. And I got to tell you now, Tar Heels' schedule's a little stout, Pack.
I thought just the opposite, Wes. I thought the fact that they don't have to see Clemson, they don't have to play Louisville, Pittsburgh was eliminated, which is natural of the Coastal. You know how high I'm on Pitt. Notre Dame at home, again, that's a good thing. I thought North Carolina, to be honest with you, with the exception of, you know, we went through all that list. I mentioned UCF and Auburn. Right out of the gate, you knew North Carolina was going to be tested in a perfect world. Those games are gone, too. I think North Carolina, to be honest with you, got an advantage with the schedule, in my opinion. Now, you and I will differ on that one, but no Pitt, no Clemson, no Louisville, no Auburn, no UCF. I think that's a good thing.
What if you have to play Notre Dame opening night? What if you, have to tackle the Irish or...
So what? You play them whenever you play them. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if it's week one or week 11.
I
mean, you know, Mac just said, hey, we don't know when we're going to play, but hey, everybody's in the same boat. So, you know, no need to complain. Roll up your sleeves, get to work. And Mac's 100% right. So, you know, somebody's going to play Notre Dame in week one. Let's go play them. I mean, if that's what it is, it's what it is. You know, that's the good news is they're going to be playing them in Chapel Hill. So, I think if you're North Carolina, I could live with that schedule.
That's true. You're right. And it's going to be very interesting to watch the schedule. And again, we'll refer to this John Swofford interview, top of the hour. And the commissioner said on Friday with us, Mark, he expects midweek for all the non-conference games to kind of be at least somewhat formalized, and that would put the schedule not far behind, I would guess, right?
It would seem that way. I mean, but everything this year, Wes, every time you say make a statement regarding something in 2020 where you just assume it's going to be, hey, piece of cake, here's the layup, forget it. Things become difficult and hard. And, you know, let's just see what the Big 12 does. For really, the Big 12 is kind of the missing piece here. We don't know what schedule model they're going to go. But as I mentioned, their presidents are scheduled to meet today. The Big 10 and the Pac-12 kind of laid out exactly what they were going to do 3.5 weeks ago, even though we're still waiting on a Big 10 schedule. Pac-12 announced theirs on Friday. We know what the ACC is going to do. We know what the SEC is going to do. I think once the Big 12 makes their announcement, then I think you'll see the TV executives and all these conference folks be able to figure this thing out pretty quickly.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.